Livingston will trigger the inbound, and here we go. It's in his hands. Celtics guarding a three-point line. Bodies flying all over the place. Livingston, trouble getting it in. Floats it to Green. Green for Steph Curry. Way behind the line. Steps to his right. It's in the air. It rims out. Rebound. Puts it around. Barnes has got it. His follow-away three is short, and it's over. It's over. It happened. The Boston Celtics have come into Oakland and snapped the longest home court winning streak in NBA history. 109 to 106. One night, late in one season, that will be remembered forever as no April Fool's joke.
Sandwiches for every damn body. That was the kind of game you win and you call your mom and say, Mama, we won.
For a year and a half, Steph Curry has been the one. Tonight, Isaiah Thomas was the one. For a year and a half, Draymond Green has been the one. Tonight, Jared Sellinger was the one. For a year and a half, the Golden State Warriors have been the one. But tonight, the Boston Celtics are the one. They are the one in 54-1.
That right there was legendary Sean Granny, the on-call color commentary for the Boston Celtics, as well as Cedric Maxwell, giving the nice radio commentary, which y'all just heard. Basically, that was a big topic that we're obviously going to cover in this episode of Off the Bench. And, of course, you got your host, Ryan, and, of course, the sixth man of Dead End Sports, Q. What up, Q?
IT is what's up, and so is the Celtics, obviously. I know you're very excited to talk about this. So without any further ado, let's just go ahead and get right into it, man. Just give us – just go ahead and go, man. Just go.
Yo, someone wake me up, because I think it's like 2008 right now, and I'm like, KG, anything is possible. Anything is possible right now.
You know, the finals are hilarious. Go ahead, man.
Low-key, I think you may agree with this, is that I think we could say Warriors-Celtics would be a crazy fun finals matchup.
Yeah, I think so.
Based on only just these two games alone, it's competitive, and it's damn fun both ways. Like, my heart was racing so much. Like, I had my hands clenched, and I was just ready to, like,
you know,
give.
Quick point.
Go ahead.
Steph is normally used to being the smaller, daintier point guard, and that's what gives him, like, the edge on a lot of, like, the bigger, like, faster point guards. Cause I'm not saying Steph isn't fast, but when he goes up against people like Russell Westbrook and John Wall, they probably have a larger body mass and a larger muscle index, and they probably feel like they could bully him a little bit. And Steph is like, all right, I'm going to just do what I do. But for some reason, whenever he goes up against people like Isaiah Thomas, who's smaller than probably every point guard in the NBA who's of importance, I feel like that bothers Steph a little bit, because he can blow by Steph for some reason. I think he's just smaller and faster than Steph, who's smaller and faster than most point guards. So it's like a role reversal of some sorts. It's just a simple thought, but I noticed this a lot.
Okay.
And it's just kind of funny to me how the hunter has become the hunted in that sense.
Yeah. The thing about, actually, to that point was back when they played in February, there was a tweet I remember reading about the scouting report. The Warriors were talking about it, and that Steph or David Lee said something about Isaiah Thomas has always been a little bit of something that makes Steph's eyes light up a little bit, because he knows how fast he is, and that it's tough to keep up with. But to be to add more context, is that Isaiah wasn't covering Curry all night, but when he did, his defense was actually, like, people think he's a defensive liability. He's gotten better under Brad Stevens in the Celtics. His defense, like, he kept up with Curry running off through screens over them, keeping up with the defense, even getting his hand on the ball a couple times too. Like, it was.
I think it's just a known fact that anybody could probably get better under Brad Stevens. Like, that's why I say that. I'm being so serious right here. I think the Celtics shouldn't be hesitant to trade for any player, and that's saying a lot. Because a lot of teams have like cogs and they have certain types that they need for their teams. I don't think the Celtics should have any worry of who Brad Stevens can or cannot make work, unless they're just a complete train wreck, like they, you know, come to practice, you know, drunk, whatever. You know, I'm not saying it's the character flaws. I'm talking about types of game. Like, to me, I think he could fix Lance Stevens, and that's how much I think Brad Stevens is an incredible coach. I'm really not even joking. I think Brad Stevens could fix Lance Stevens and have him play very great defense like he used to. And that's why I say that no one in the Celtics organization should be afraid to trade for any player, because Brad can fix them, dude. He's a fixer. He's like Larry Brown. I used to call Larry Brown the fixer. He's Mr. Fix-It.
Sexer. Okay. Right. To go, basically, yes. If many of you are listening, obviously, first and foremost, before we go into more detail, make sure you subscribe to Dead on Sports Tuesday, 9 p.m. Follow all the socials and make sure to follow also Off the Bench. Now that that's out of the way, the main event, that was the Saturday night game after the Cavaliers at Hawks game that went to overtime. That I thought was interesting to say.
That was a good game too, by the way.
Yes, it was. Kyle, you should not feel bad about your Hawks. They played some very good defense at the end. It just wasn't quite enough. Now this Golden State game, I literally was to give it the full idea how I was. I was expecting a loss. I was pulling for them because I know they can make it competitive. Not having Crowder, I was worried. But Evan Turner stepped up because his perimeter defense, I think, is underrated. But the game plan, like, here's the thing. I didn't know this till after the game and the post game came out. Everyone on the Celtics team, even Brad to a degree, were confident in winning in this game. After Draymond Green gets off his first two three-pointers because Steph and Clay couldn't hit, apparently Avery Bradley and Isaiah Thomas were saying, like, we're going to win this game. Like, they felt it. Like, they were going to win this game.
They have every right to feel that way, especially after the game in December where it took Isaiah missing some uncharacteristically bad clutch shots at the end.
Right.
To lose. And it took some, let's be serious here, took some questionable calls by the refs at the end to seal it for the Golden State Warriors. And the Celtics just said, all right, we're going to come in here. We're going to strap you from the perimeter. We're going to force you to make tough shots. And if you go inside, we're going to swat that shit. And for most of the game, that game plan,
it worked.
It was basically a thank you, Coach Pop. It was basically like,
well,
it's basically like Steven saw the game. And then, so I'm by the Spurs game. Saw the Spurs game, and then he said, all right, let me go and take this a step further. And that's what he did. Like,
it's funny.
I give all the credit in the world.
It's funny that you say that, because I tweeted this on the account that I think Pop watched the Celtics game in order to figure out how to defend Curry that night for them to win. So that's funny that you mentioned that.
There's just so many thoughts going through my head, man, but I have to say this right now on record.
Yep.
Golden State Warriors are not going to win the 2016 NBA Finals.
Whoa. Hot take. Is that a hot take?
Hot take. That's a major hot take. But I've been saying that for months now, so I guess you could say it's damn near cold as hell.
Oh, my God. But I'm going
to back up. They're not going to win the Finals. I'm sorry.
Am I talking to Charles Barkley?
Oh, God. Let me tell you something, Shaq, I'm gonna
that was pretty good.
It's pretty good, right? I'm gonna tell you something. The Golden State Warriors, Stephen Curry, they're just not gonna win. They're just not gonna win the finals, dude. They're just not gonna win. You even notice how Charles, whenever he wants to talk, he'll say, "I'm all right, I'm gonna tell you all." It's just so funny with that.
Right, I'm gonna tell you.
Yeah, it's just so stupid. But anyway, Chuck, I agree with Chuck on this, man. I don't think that the Warriors are going to win the finals because I'm going to give you a couple reasons. This is not blind Warrior. I fucking love the Warriors. Actually, I enjoy watching them over my own team. Obviously, the Sixers are fucking trash right now, but it's by design, so I'm not even mad. And we're going to be talking about that later on, not this podcast, but a couple podcasts from now when draft lottery happens. We're probably going to do a live reaction to that. So definitely going to be on the lookout for that, you all. So, I mean, Chuck, I agree, man. And the reasons why, number one, is that record that they're chasing. They're chasing the record, but they're not doing it in a healthy way, in my opinion. To me, they're sacrificing their health over their chances at repeating. And if you ask me, I think it's valiant of them to want to break this record. But dude, if you're going to sacrifice, like, dude, people forget that this, like, Curry's ankles, as much as they've held up these last couple years, when he twisted them and he at that weird angle at the OKC game, that could have went completely different than what it did. You know how he just like kind of came back from that? He kind of just came back from it. And I was like, okay, yeah, forget all that. Dude, he could have literally broken one. And this would have been a completely different season after that. He could have, you know, strained one. He could have had a muscle tear. You know, he could have had a meniscus. You know what I'm saying? There's, knock on wood, a whole bunch of things that could have happened there. And you're seeing the effects of them chasing this record in the way that they're starting to play now. And for those who don't remember, you know, and I'm not saying I do, but just from watching the game tapes and actually going back and being a student of the game, the 96 Bulls, they were better after their All-Star break than they were at the beginning of the season. Okay. And the Warriors, I believe, are not.
You'd be correct. There is an article from 538 that was published today about that, saying that there's been a little bit of a decline on their path, that they were staying at an average of above 73 win, and now that they're reaching closer to that 73 win point, it's been on a down curve.
Exactly. So they're declining slightly. Their decline is still better than most teams, you know, peak, obviously, but they're declining, and you're seeing it in the way that they play. They're getting tired faster. Steph hasn't, and which is crazy because Steph hasn't played in a lot of fourth quarters, but he's starting to having to play more because you're seeing the effects of it take wear on people like Iguodala, Azili. I believe Clay is playing through something right now, if I'm not mistaken. If it's not Clay, then it's Harrison Barnes who's playing through something.
Yeah, he's been just since that.
Yeah, and Harrison Barnes just hasn't been doing much.
But he was better in this game.
He was better that game for sure, but consistently hasn't been doing much. So my problem with them, number one, is the record. Number two is the Spurs and a lot of teams in the West are now have the blueprint on how to beat them.
Well, yes, but the thing is, can they do it? And can they execute it consistently for 48 minutes?
Here's the thing. I think a team like Utah is scrappy enough to do it.
That I'd agree with you.
I think the Spurs have more than enough talent on and offensive firepower to keep up and beat them.
Well, they got to dictate the pace.
It's a toss-up. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
So I would give them that. I think a team like a team like Portland. Even though they got blown out the last time, that series is 1-1 right now. If this was a playoff, it would be 1-1, two blowouts.
I give that a 70-30 Warriors favor.
I would too, but people are just acting like the Warriors are going to run through these guys, man. I just don't see it. And we're just completely forgetting the fact that this is a complete long shot. But the Houston Rockets, they're completely terrible. But they're so terrible that I'm afraid of them. It's one of those weird, like, Detroit Piston type of teams where it's like no one really cares. But when they get in the finals or they get in the playoffs, they start, you know, bruising teams because they have nothing to lose. They're the forgotten ones.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the same thing. I think what the thing I would agree with you is that they're a 500 team. Their talent and how they played last year, they shouldn't be. Yet they're playing, the amount of effort is, like, if they're behind, then they play catch up. And then all of a sudden they're a threat. And then, but if they're ahead and they just get lackadaisical, they can get blown out.
Yeah, and they just need to, like, for some reason, they just need to, like, act like they're down 40 and just start just going hard. Like, I don't know. Because James Harden is a top 10 talent in this league when he actually tries, you're right. When he tries, he's a top 10 talent in this league. Dwight Howard, he can be a formidable center when he actually gives a damn about basketball.
And stick
him. Ariza, great, great, great bench piece. Great starting player. Just he's an all-around player. I love his game. But for some reason, he's falling off this year. But whenever they're on, they're on. You know, Michael Beasley's turned into Michael Beasley, and he looks really good. He looks really good again. I don't know what happened. He might have took a Senzu bean and powered up. But I'm really impressed with how he's come back from China balling.
He's amazing.
And they're just a dangerous team that I think if they get in the eighth spot, the Warriors, I don't think the Warriors want to see Houston if they're tired like I think they are. This is all on the presumption that I think it could go six. That's all I'm saying. I think it could go six. I'm not saying that they would beat them, but I'm saying it would go six. They would get a little more tired from having to push that hard in the first round, unlike last year's sweep, if I'm not mistaken. They swept the Pelicans the first round of that. Right? Yeah. Yeah, it was a sweep. It was a quick four games. Six. Then you tire them out, and then who they have to play next? Like what the Clippers? You don't want to see the Clippers when you're tired and Blake is back.
Actually, just a counterpoint is that quad injury. That's the reason why he's been so long out, and he may need off season surgery to fully heal it. But he's gonna play through the pain, so he may not be as effective as we may think.
Who, Blake? Oh man.
Right, because that quad injury is going to be playing through pain and conditioning, obviously.
Well, how do you feel about just a potential Warriors-Clippers matchup to begin with?
The Clippers would have to play the defense that they've been capable of these past couple games. And if their bench players play like they did against the Thunder, then I feel more confident in them. But that's assuming that can happen more consistently because, I mean, Christ's sake, when you started Austin Rivers, Cole Aldrich, Jamal Crawford as your starting five against the Thunder at full strength and you lose by 2 points, I think. It was 119-117?
Yeah, so, I think so.
So, I mean, that's a pretty big statement for their defense.
I guess the way that I feel about the Clippers is different from everybody else. It's like they're like that girlfriend that my mom hates, but like they just don't. No, you don't see what I see in her. It's just I don't know, man. I really think that they could be something, but because I like Austin Rivers I like what he's doing lately. He's playing pretty good.
I'm gonna say this. If for some reason breaking his hand fixed his broken shot, that's crazy.
Who, Austin Rivers?
Right, because the way he played in that game against the Thunder, he was
that jumper was buckets. Wet. That like, jumper was wet, man.
Yeah, I was just like, did breaking his hand somehow fix his jumper? I don't know.
And here's how this relates to just the Boston game, is the fact that you see how IT shot the second half was going. You see that the Warriors don't have a plan B when a score is going off. Has anyone noticed that? The Warriors don't know what to do with themselves when a score is going up. They let that affect the entire game. And I'm not saying that a lot of teams know how either, but I haven't seen a lot of championship teams like Miami. Miami, those Miami teams with LeBron, they knew how to let just guys score. But, you know, because what's his name? Russell Westbrook would have 44 game five of the NBA Finals. And they just let, all right, cool, you can go and get your 40, but we're going to continue to win this game. You see teams like the Celtics. Kobe was dropping, what, 30 a game, and they still destroyed the LA Lakers. And for some reason, the Warriors have a huge problem when a natural-born scorer is asserting his will. And what I notice from their defense is they start to scramble a lot. They start to panic, and then they start to overplay and leaving people wide open. That's how people like Jared Sullinger get little 15-footers in the paint, which made no sense. Hey, what the hell was going on there? Like,
when we're done talking about this and I can focus on this game, I'm gonna explain that to you as well.
Like, no, go on. No, please go ahead. No, okay, explain that. Right. Like, what the hell was that about?
I want to make a counterpoint before I go into more details about this game, because I really have been studying up on it, because it's been such a great game to me, and I listened to the Nate Duncan's emergency pod that night, just because it was just a fascinating game to me. The counterpoint to what you said about a score going off, the thing with IT was, in that third quarter where he was dueling Curry back and forth, Curry had 21, IT had 18 for the whole quarter. Curry was getting his points with the threes, the screens, the high pick and roll, even though Bradley – they defended that so great. Because it wasn't on the first shots either. The only time he got the first shot off was when he had to shoot it from 40 from the logo on a high pick. But IT, what he was doing was a lot of dribble drive handoffs and being able to get a little crossover and then use his speed to drive to the lane. And when he finishes, the way he uses the rim as kind of like a sixth defender, that's what he did to Draymond or any of their other bigs that were on the floor. It's not like the Warriors' defense was terrible. It wasn't. They did defend. Like, because the first half with Bogut, IT just couldn't get his shot going. But at the same time, yes, the refs were not being favorable to the Celtics, more so in the – actually, I can't even say it's more so in the first half. There were some bad calls in this game, to be fair. And I'm also upset that there's no last two-minute report, because apparently due to the Celtics having a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter when that time happened, they didn't do it. That's why, or it was over 7, which I thought was bullshit. But to me, to go into detail, all right, so Jared Sullinger, he, I figured, was going to be a key. Him and Marcus Smart were the big X factors for me. Actually, throw Evan Turner in there too, because he was filling in for Jay Crowder being out. Because the thing with Evan Turner, and you can make the same argument for Sean Livingston, is they're the guys on that team that are the mid-range game and that are key to making those type of shots. And he had ice-cold blood in his veins. Now, for Sully, his main thing was, since he plays center, was drawing Andrew Bogut out, the spacing. His jump mid-range game and his build. He hit 2 3-pointers. He had 20-12, 3 assists, and maybe 1 block. He was 7 for 13, I think. His spacing, he shot with such confidence, but he's the only guy, because of his girth, that he can back down Draymond Green in a post-up. He's the only guy that can move him back. He's such a niche player that I think that's why he's going to stay. But anyway, I'm gushing too much because I'm sipping on green Kool-Aid and I'm puffing a nice cigar in honor of Red Auerbach right now with some green smoke. what Jared Sullinger basically was doing, since he's a center that's not like a typical post-up, I have to be within, less than 10 feet of the basket, I can shoot from outside, so I open up the court more, I stretch it out. So they have to respect his jumper and hitting those threes even more so. So Bogut would have to come out. It would cause some mismatches. Plus, the Warriors' defense, there was some miscommunications at time. That's why IT could also take off and then create contact to finish. But Sullinger's game basically was – his main things for this game was he's an elite rebounder. He has vacuum hands. He is able to either refer to offensive rebound or defensive rebound to control, and that was a major key factor. that on both ends of the court for him, but his offense, being able to basically, if it was Isaiah driving in, then he had to pass out and the ball moved around and then it was given to Sully, that means when the ball's in his hands, that means all of a sudden, oh shoot, I gotta respect his shot, so I gotta go out to defend him just in case he does a mid-range shot, because he can hit him, and he was. So that was a big key factor, because otherwise, you know, if they get the sag on him, then the defense collapses a little more, and they can take advantage. That was a big factor, because he was every guy on this up. It was a team effort when all guys keyed and locked in. That it was just so critical, from Sully to Evan Turner's mid range, like hit, being able to post up Sean Livingston or whoever or Clay. To get those close mid-range shots, like he was just ice cold money. Oh my god, it was. I can't believe it.
So I mean, like I think that it was interesting to see the coaching battle going on. I think that was more interesting than the actual game, which is pretty insane to say. Because to me, like Steve Kerr to me is like a savant. Like he's just a natural born coach. I see him on the sideline and he just has the poise of a guy who's been here for like 20 years. Like, you know, he has that pop blood inside of him. Right. And see that coach in Brad too, because to me, they're both disciples that come from this team first
mentality,
win always mentality. And it's just like, they seem like coaches who hate to lose, because Steve Kerr played with a player who literally despised losing to the point that it made him ill. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like he played with Jordan. So that winning, and he played under Pop. He played under Phil. So the fact that he has these three influences in his basketball life play in the coach that he is today. And the coach that he is today preaches the fact that team over everything is going to get us championships. And the despising of losses is only going to be healthy for a team that all buys into that same mentality. And I think Brad Stevens, and I'm not going to pretend that I know a lot about Brad Stevens' life, but if you told me Brad Stevens has never, you know, went to coaching seminars that were done by either Pop or Phil or Larry Brown, then I wouldn't believe you, dude, because I see complete similarities in the way that they coach. I see Brad Stevens making the adjustments. He's studying his opponents. And I see the fact that I can see the adjustments from, and this is something that like you should also do. Go back, compare the quarters of the December game to this game. I haven't done it. I'm going to do it. Yeah. Just compare the quarters and the way that they attacked, the way that they defended, and just do it one game by another. So the first quarter of the December game versus now, second quarter, and so on and so on. And you'll see, I'm almost certain, you will see that Brad got, he put his arm around IT, and he told him, all right, look, when these closing minutes happen, if you don't have a shot, I don't want you to take it. I want you to pass it out, and I want you to get a better shot, or I just want you to get the assist. You know what I'm saying? And I want you to create the offense. Because I think the first game in the fourth quarter,
he let it play.
IT, go, you know, because you want to give your shooter confidence. But I think he said, IT, I trust you to make your shots, but I also need you to understand the urgency of the moment. And sometimes creating a better shot is better than shooting a mid to contested shot, you know. So I think Brad put that, you know, seed in his head, and you see it in the game. IT was more willing to assist. He was more willing to set players up. And he was way more willing to look around the court instead of just going straight up with, you know, Steph to the rim, or, you know, trying to go into the field of trees, you know, and get smacked or whatever.
Right.
And you see it, that it showed in the game that IT's confidence was up after, you know, he started getting a couple assists, even though his shot wasn't falling. Right. You saw that his confidence in his teammates was there. So he was able to kick out for open threes, or he was even able to get people like Avery Bradley and Smart. Like those type of guys, those are what the Celtics are doing right. And, you know, whenever I look at the Sixers rebuild, I always wonder what our difference is between the Celtics. And I think the difference is the fact that Brett Brown, and I hate to make this about the Sixers, but I have to. Brett Brown, what he does is he gets his players to play hard, and he's kind of like feeding them to the sharks, and whichever one can swim is the one that we keep. And the Celtics rebuild is different in the terms of we have a system, we have a philosophy, we have a culture. Here's where we're building, and we need you to fit into these cogs.
Exactly. Yeah, you have a role. You have a special. That's what Brad does. He has these. Every player has a skill that they're good at, and he knows how to utilize their different skill sets so that they can do that and play their games the best. That's why IT loves it. He says they just want me to be me. They want me to play my game.
Exactly. And that's the difference between the Sixers and the Celtics is the Sixers are just go out there, play, whichever one makes the best plays. Those are the ones that we're going to keep. And those are the ones that we're going to bring in into our system when we develop it later on, which could either be a great thing or just because, you know, I guess it's basically you're seeing who has the raw talent. And there can be problems that come with that, but there can also be good benefits of seeing who can just flat out play and who has the skills and who has certain, you know, certain abilities and attributes so you can identify what you have in players. When the Celtics do it, it's just, all right, we know what this guy does, but we're going to bring them in to fit the system. They don't bring nobody in if they don't think that they can either be
utilize
helpful
the skill set,
or,
right.
Yeah, or utilize the skill set. The Sixers are completely different. They're just, hey, bring this guy in, see if he's good.
Right.
Celtics are, hey, we know this guy is good, let's bring him in.
To your point.
That's the difference.
To your point, what you said about comparing the two games, the main things that you can see is that the rotations were much different. That rotation that you saw, barring no Jay Crowder, that was basically a playoff rotation in this game. As opposed to the first one in December, we still had David Lee. We were still trying out James Young for his defense to see how he improved. There was more people in that rotation at that point. Tyler Zeller did not play in this game at all, and I loved it.
I didn't see much James Young. Did he even get in?
In the Warriors game, he did, and he actually had 5 points. I remember picking it up.
The second game?
The second game, no. He was in the D-League.
Okay, all right. Okay, I'm going to say, I didn't see him at all.
The only rookie that did play was, you know, Terry Rozier, who is an elite offensive rebounder and so damn fast, and he played really well, even though he did not necessarily impact in the terms of scoring, but his rebounding, he had like six. Like he fought for those defensive and offensive rebounds. It was
so you think skill. He has a role on this team?
Yes.
Really?
He's getting the most minutes when we have injuries. Because at first we were trying out RJ. Mickey would get finally got his time. We were all loving it. And then Rozier.
He's trying to get Terry a skilled offensive big man.
Like he is using his rebounding. So like he was jumping up. He has such a lift. He got, like I said, he had 6 rebounds. I think he had 2 assists, and he took maybe 2 shots because he's still raw in that sense. And he's still kind of nervous with the rookie yips.
Well, that leash is short, but he's doing the most with it, I presume.
No, he helped contribute to the win because those rebounds that prevented the Warriors from getting any type of control at those critical possessions.
And initiating that fast break, stopping that is very, very key.
Marcus Smart can ignore that because he has those outlet passes. But anyway, to go further on, yes, I think Stevens outcoached Kerr. And that's not saying it was like a outmatch or outclass. No, both sides were very well coached. The problem was the Warriors ran ragged, and they felt the defensive presence. Avery Bradley's defense I know you compared it to like an 80s style perimeter defender, like kind of like a Gary Payton, but he, remember, he learned from Tony Allen in a way. He forced Steph. He got up right in his face, so Steph literally has to keep his arm out while he dribbles, so to protect himself from getting swiped. But yeah. Avery still swipes or is able to push him back, so he's already like closer to the half court line than he is to the 3-point.
And yes,
it was so much pressure that when Amir Johnson came up further, I think it was either maybe when someone was trying to set up the pick, he came up out and then kind of like switched off to get on top, and they managed to push Curry back for a backcourt violation. Like, it was that type of defensive pressure.
Yeah, that's what I said. He's like, to me, he's like that 80s slugger, man. I don't know. There's something about him that I really enjoy seeing. You know, I he's in the same vein as, like, Rajah Bell for some reason. You know, Rajah Bell was, like, a really good defensive player. And to me, I guess the best comparison I can give him, I don't know if you will like this or not, is okay. I see a lot of Bruce Bowen.
Okay.
When I see Avery Bradley.
Okay.
And I remember watching Kobe Doing Work, a documentary by Spike Lee. And Kobe said that one of his favorite players to play against is Bruce Bowen, because it reminds him of the 80s, because Bruce will be very handsy. He'll get in Kobe's personal space, he'll get in his bubble, and he'll make it very uncomfortable for him to move the ball.
Okay.
Because he impedes his progress. Right. And when you stop someone from, you know, he'll take charges on you that you think should be, you know, blocking fouls, and it gets you mad. You're like, man, this is fucking this is bullshit, man. This guy is not, you know what I'm saying? He gets those reactions out of you.
Right.
And I think Bradley, I think his footwork is more disciplined than Bruce Bowen's, because Bruce, as good as he was, I don't think he's as light on his feet as Bradley. I don't think he's as agile.
No, because he's able to contort his body around the screens, picks, and he is literally within seconds. Like, as soon as Clay or Steph got the ball, he was right there, and they could not get the ball off almost.
I think he's as good with his hands as someone like Rajah Bell was. I think Rajah Bell was very underrated defensive player. Another Kobe stopper per se on the Suns. A lot of teams tried to, you know, copy what Rajah Bell did to Kobe that one game. I think Kobe had like maybe what, 13 points in one game. It was a playoff game, I think. And everyone was like, "Damn, Rajah Bell locked him up." You know, I think it's like those Ron Artest days. I think he's in that defensive mold. He's in that mold of the Bruce Bowen, the Rajah Bell, the Ron Artest, the Tony Allens. He's in that mold. I think Gary Payton, to me, I see that more in Marcus Smart than I see in Avery Bradley.
Yeah, and he's starting to show more of that. I want to get to Smart. There's an article on Celtics blog that from Kevin O'Connor, a writer I love very much for his work. He highlighted a lot of stuff that Smart did, was showing some of his glimpses of superstar potential. And he's making, again, when he's on the court, he impacts winning because he's always got a positive net rating. Those extra hustle plays or those extra possessions, where it be the offensive rebound or the tip in to get the, if a shot missed and he gets it right back up and you don't expect it because that happened in that game. Or his defense was very good off ball and on Clay. Clay did not have airspace to shoot when Marcus was
defending.
He was, his body positioning was fantastic. And when he was able to get the ball, he already saw, you know, who's ahead, get the outlet pass, go. Like, it was that typical Bill Russell, Red Auerbach fast break play. It was so great. And yes, his stat line will not jump out, but if you guys watch the game, or if you can watch the game somehow, there's links out there to watch the game.
He's the soldier in the trenches that no one ever sees who's putting in the dirty work. But yes. when you really take a closer look, you're like, damn, he's really making this whole thing move. And, you know, just like a quick fantasy, I want to get your take on this. Because, I know a lot of Celtics fans have been, like, talking about this scenario for years, ever since he got drafted. But, like, how good would a defensive lineup consisting of Marcus Smart at point guard and Nerlens Noel at defensive center be? Like, just, like, because all right, say you do get past Smart. You are.
You got Bradley. So, you got Crowder.
So you're at the rim. I mean, what do you do? All right. So, all right. Let's say this. All right. Russell Westbrook, you get past Smart.
Right.
You get past Bradley. Oh, you somehow got past Jay Crowder. Now you got to get at Nerlens. Like, I don't, like, that shit would be crazy.
Yeah, that would be insane.
And I just always think about that lineup because I think that might be the best defensive lineup possible in the NBA today.
That'd be crazy. Like, yeah.
All you need is Kawhi Leonard and, like, that. I mean, that's literally that. Literally. In maybe 3 years, that might be the defensive, like, starting team. Like, that might be the AP defensive team if in, like, 3 years. You know what I'm saying? If you put Kawhi in there, obviously. So, I mean, I always think about that. And, I mean, I hope it never happens unless it's, like, for a Brooklyn pick. But just, But just the fact that Nerlens, you know, is always linked to these trade rumors, something's got to give at one point. So, and we're definitely going to talk about trade rumors in a second. And I guess we should just give our closing thoughts on this game overall and what this means to the impact of the rest of the season, how teams play the Warriors, and hopefully teams can start to see that the Celtics are not just some, you know, intermediate team, that they actually could make noise in the Eastern Conference.
Right. I'll go first. The reason why I wanted to talk about this so much, yes, I'm a diehard Celtics fan. The main thing is it's been giving me, like, the biggest grin on my face from these past couple of days was from the Portland game. And even before that, even the Kings game and the first Warriors game, was Steph was the first to say, man, I'm glad Avery got that sixth foul because he was giving him the fits. He was 9-for-27 in that game. Yes, he got 30 points, but it was a double overtime game. The Kings game, Rondo said it again that he's been saying for years. He's the best on-ball perimeter defender in the league. Then we go to the Portland game. Both Damian Lillard after the game says, you're the best on-ball defender in the league. Ever. Like, not ever, but in the league, period, because he is. CJ McCollum says it again, like, we don't have to deal with Avery Bradley's here in the West. We don't have to deal with that. We're not going to see a defensive team like that out here in the West. And then he goes on Twitter during the Warriors game saying that he's the best. He's first team all defense. He's got the clamps. He's the best first team all defense. Just giving him all this praise. And then Damian Lillard says, you know, great win by Boston. And Steve Kerr agrees with Damian Lillard saying, yeah, he's the best on ball one of the best on ball defenders, as well as Marcus Smart. It's just, I relate to these guys because when I play basketball, I relate a lot to Avery Bradley because I was that kind of guy. Oh, I still am. I focus on defense a lot. I love to steal the ball. I love to, you know, get my knees down low and just try to swipe the ball away, steal, and do a fast break and just run. That was just my kind of game. So that's why I relate to them so much, and seeing them get all this praise just really makes me really happy to see that he's getting the acknowledgement that he's deserved, that he's been working since he was a rookie that was working on his offense for so long. So it's been great. The implications, now that the Celtics got on a national media stage, you know, they broke the 54 winning streak. Now that all the Warriors can only do is tie the 86 Celtics best home record for 40-1 or 50-1 now, if they, you know, went as far as to win the championship. Now KD gets to see, hey, they beat them without Jay Crowder, without a superstar, so to speak, that's big scorer. Maybe I'll listen to them in free agency. Maybe, or such and such will hear, listen to a pitch from Boston now. It will matter to some degree. Will it happen? I'm not going to say it's a guarantee, but now it's,
I mean, it'll, okay, plant the seeds because KD, at the most, KD will sign a 1-year deal with OKC and see what Russell Westbrook does. And, you know, just by taking offers and taking meetings with the Don, you know, known as people like Pat Riley, and taking dinners with, you know, go get 'em trader Danny, you know what I'm saying? Then he's going to have those in the back of his mind, like, hey, should I go to South Beach? Should I go to Boston? I mean, we did lose again. And then you call him again, like, hey, remember what we talked about last summer? And then you can hopefully pounce. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So,
right.
I mean, my closing thoughts, basically, is everything that you said, man. Like, the Celtics, they look really good against the Warriors. I will say this. I'm very surprised Steph missed that open three at the end. I think...
Ball don't lie.
Yeah, ball don't lie.
I forgot to mention that the refs... Yes, Warriors fans, there were some bad calls against you, but you have to admit, Draymond Green got away with the most Draymond Greeniest plays possible with this, that supposed steal from Amir that Brad Stevens called the timeout that should have been the Celtics timeout. They should have the ball, and then...
It wouldn't be the Warriors without a Draymond Green obvious foul at the end of the game.
And,
like,
then he suplexed Marcus Smart at the end to get that Steph 3 foul. I mean...
Well, sometimes you got to powerbomb somebody to get the point across, man. You got to just... You got to be in a...
Yeah. I agree. The Warriors. They're still on track. They can still get the 73 wins. It's possible. It's a lot harder now. Not as easy. The Celtics get a big statement win. It'll happen in the offseason. This offseason is going to be crazy. Like, when we talk about more about this, it's going to be absolutely insane. All these things that are coming out now. And basically, it's a statement win. They match up really well against the Warriors because they're the best at defending the three, while the Warriors are the best at shooting the three, ironically. So it's kind of like the perfect offense versus defense type deal. So we'll see what happens. It's a great win. It's a great statement win. Helps Boston. It may hurt Golden State just a little bit and breaking the record, but, you know, it's one game. It's not deciding anything. It's just remember what happens, you know, say Golden State and Boston meet in the finals. Then we'll talk then if that's the case.
Man, I will literally die laughing just the fact that
if LeBron that happened
first and foremost.
If that happened, I don't know what I'd do, man.
No, I'm like, the thing is, I'm not going to rule that out. I'm not going to disrespect, because I trust Brad Stevens more than any coach in the Eastern Conference. I trust him more than most coaches in the NBA. So if you told me, if you told me that, you know, in 2 months from now, that the Celtics defeated the Cavaliers in 7 games, I'd be like, probably, man.
The last thing I forgot to mention, there's so many things I probably didn't say. The last thing I forgot to mention when I said that Stevens outcoached, the main thing he did that no other coach I think has done, maybe other than Pop, was when the Warriors started to go on their run, you know, hit a three, and all of a sudden the momentum's back, the crowd's roaring at Roracle. He called the timeout immediately. Stop the momentum. Come back.
Yeah, I love when Pop does that, but I hate it when he does it too sometimes. Cause I'm just like, dude, just let the game go. But then I understand why he doesn't do it, because he's like, no, fuck that. Why am I going to let your crowd start going, let's go, Warriors? Like, no one wants that. So everyone's like, all right, time out. The crowd gets quiet again. And then you just get your team collected. Like, all right, hey, y'all, forget all these cheers. Forget the signs. Forget all the, you know, the music and the announcers, and just focus on each other. Hear each other's voices. Hear each other's voices. Talk out there and go get your W. And that's what it's about. And I think that's what's so important with the philosophy of what Brad Stevens teaches, is it's just teamwork literally is going to make this dream work. Because without each other, they can't do it. Because there is no just one guy who's just above everybody else. Like, as good as IT is, All-Star, obviously, we understand. But IT only goes as good of what his team can bring with him also. It's a we're all going to the promised land type deal. It's not a IT is, you know, this guy and he's, you know, he's bringing us along with him. No, it's, hey, yo, I need your defense, Avery. Hey, I need your defense, Marcus. I need your defense. Jared. Yeah, I need that to do what I do. It's not even like better. A Jordan thing where, you know, oh, I'm just take over. No, even as much as he takes over, it's because you guys are locking up and I can score 10 straight. That's what it's all about. And I think that's what's so fantastic about the Celtics, is that they're just a cut from that spur cloth. Special spur cloth alert. Or it's just like, it's just incredible to see it. And I'm just forever going to be watching Brad Stevens. Mm-hmm. And just in awe of, like, what, like, where the hell did they find this guy? Obviously, I remember he beat, if I'm not mistaken, he was the Butler coach, right?
He was the Butler coach who did back-to-back finals.
And he beat the VC Rams one year when the VC Rams went to the Final Four. I remember that. I'm like, damn, this coach is fucking good. Not only because the VC Rams were like really on a tear. They're like, they were beating teams that they had beat Kansas. And I was like, damn, this VCU team is fucking awesome. But when Brad Stevens just shut them down, I'm like, damn, this coach was getting these players right the week before. Completely shut down the VCU Rams, and they haven't been anywhere since. And it's just incredible. So
my last guess, thing is, the last thing I'll say is this. Just as the Sixers got trust the process, I think the new thing that may be a coin phrase from Brad is the progress is in the poise.
Very, very true.